If it's all right with all of you, I'll just continue where I left off from the sequence of Canto 1 and we'll be reading verses Canto 1, chapter 18, verses 42, 43, and 44. And this is a political science class, 101. The storyline is the title of the chapter is Prikshit, cursed by a Brahmin boy, and so what's happened so far is Maharishi Prikshit did what he did. He placed the snake around the sage's neck, dead snake, after not being received by the sage at all, just not even acknowledging his presence, not offering him water, not offering him common courtesy, the king. So, in a very unbecoming and inappropriate and unlike Maharishi Prikshit move, he took the dead snake and said, "This is a suitable garland for you," and placed it around his neck and left. And the son of the sage, who was so young, he was just off somewhere playing, and he heard from his other friends, "Oh, what happened to your father? This very bad thing happened. Blah, blah, blah." And after hearing, the young boy became filled with anger, cursed Maharishi Prikshit with a brahminical curse to die for the offense to my father by being bitten by a mystical snake bird. And then he ran home, and when he came home, seeing his father with a serpent around his neck, just being a small boy, he just burst into tears and crying and crying, and his crying disturbed the trance that his father was in, and his father opened his eyes and saw the boy and saw the garland and removed and asked the boy, "Why? What's all this emotion?" And the boy said, "I cursed Maharishi Prikshit. The sage threw the dead snake aside and asked his son why he was crying, whether anyone had done him harm." And then the son blurted out what happened. And so this is now the father replying to the son, "Oh, my boy, your intelligence is immature, and therefore you have no knowledge that the king, who is the best among human beings," Naradeva, "best among the human beings, is as good as the personality of Godhead." Prabhupada has translated this as a man hyphen God. Although he's Nara, he is to be viewed as Deva. "As good as the personality of Godhead, he is never to be placed on an equal footing with common men. The citizens of the state," Maharishi Prikshit's state, "live in prosperity, being protected by his unsurpassable prowess. My dear boy, the Lord, who carries the wheel of a chariot, is represented by the monarchical regime. And when this regime is abolished, the whole world becomes filled with thieves, who then at once vanquish the unprotected subjects like scattered lambs." So Prabhupada doesn't combine these translations into one verse or two verses into one verse, but he gives one purport for both, starting with The monarchical regime, he uses this word, represents the Supreme Lord. The king is supposed to be, and in the Surya Vamsa, the line of Ikshvaku from the sun god, they literally were. They're representatives of God. It's just like we find in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4. Krishna says in the beginning, long ago, I taught this imperishable science to the sun god. And sun god taught it to his son, Manu. That's Vaivasvata Manu. And Manu, in turn, instructed to his son, Ikshvaku. So there's disciplic succession amongst the kings, and Ikshvaku doesn't give the rest of his history, but Ikshvaku came to this planet and established this Surya dynasty, the dynasty from the sun, and Ramchandra's in that dynasty. So the kings were supposed to be like Dasarath, ruled for 60,000 years. That was in Treta Yuga. So comparable to a king ruling for 60 years at our present time. So kings were supposed to be representatives of God, and as representatives of God, treated like God, not treated like an ordinary human being. A similar example of that was when Sanatan Goswami was questioned by the king, Nawab Hussein Shah. Who is this mendicant that's come to our area? Flocks of people, thousands, tens of thousands of people go to wherever he is. Who is he? You're my minister, tell me, who is he? And Sanatan Goswami said, you're the king. You're the representative of God. Surely you know. You're all-knowing. You're the king. You're the representative of God. But because you're asking, I'll say. And Sanatan Goswami wanted to downplay who he was, because he knew that this king can't control his senses, and you know that today he's friendly and tomorrow he's nasty. So therefore, he went to advise Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this king, don't stay around this place. This king could do anything at any time. But he was offering him that kind of respect. Coincidentally, in the Chicago temple, the section that's being read is Kardama Muni and Swayambhuva Manu meeting. Swayambhuva Manu is Kshatriya, and Kardama Muni is Brahmana. So the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, Devahuti, wished to be married to Kardama Muni. That was her choice. So, although she had never met him, she had heard of him because he's living off in the forest. And so Swayambhuva Manu, dutifully, to control his daughter, went to meet Kardama Muni. And when he went to meet Kardama Muni, being the very elevated personality that he was, Kardama Muni immediately received the king as if he was God, because the Vedic culture is a guest comes unexpected to your door, you should receive them as you would receive God, because who knows, maybe they are. And at least by culture, you should receive them in that way. So he received him in such a nice manner and praised the role of the king, Kshatriya. He was honoring the position, although he's Brahmana, meaning by social status, he's above the king. But he's giving honor to the king because the role of the king is so important, and he describes the role, how important the role of the king is. And when he finished speaking, Swayambhuva Manu was speechless, being so nicely praised. But then, when he did speak, he said that you're the one who was elevated because you're directly born from the face of the Virat Rup. And your function is from the mouth as the mouthpiece of the Supreme Lord to speak the message of the Vedas, and by so doing delivering knowledge of the Absolute Truth and the glories of the Lord to everyone. And by so doing, you're protecting everyone, including us, Kshatriyas. The Brahmanas protect the Kshatriyas by their performance of their brahminical duty. And the Kshatriyas protect the Brahmanas by protecting brahminical culture. And not only with their arms, like forcibly with their military strength protecting, but by their upholding the principles as taught by the Brahmanas. They're giving protection to Brahminical culture and ensuring that then in turn the rest of the citizens will follow. By the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas properly following, the other citizens will follow. It's just a natural arrangement. It's how it works, how things work. It's very nice understanding. The Brahmanas protect the Kshatriyas by giving instruction, by their brahminical duty. The Kshatriyas protect the Brahmanas by performing their particular duty. And then in turn, all the citizens, and then in turn, all the living beings, all the praja, are protected when the human society is acting properly. So, in the discussion that we had this morning, one of the questions raised was, when the king has such a vast kingdom, like the whole world, or in Swayambhuva Manu was the whole universe, the emperor of the universe. How do they see that every living being is engaged in their prescribed duty? And how do they do it? And there's different ways to answer that question. One is they do through representatives, but they do through the agency of their own piety. Because of the strength of their piety, it uplifts others. It ensures that others will be properly situated. And the third answer is by the culture of respect. That is to say, when there is proper respect, people follow. And when respect is broken, people do what they want to do, which is they don't want to follow. So they do something else because there's no respect. And that's the culture of anarchy. So in this purport, Prabhupada is honoring very much the system of monarchy. But why was the system of monarchy, how did it go wrong? Here, Maharaj Parikshit is confronting the personality of Kali because, you know, he's imitating the position of a king without the qualifications. So you have imitation kings in the role of a king, and they have this absolute authority, but they're corrupt. People don't want that system anymore. Not just don't want the guy in the wrong guy in the right position. They don't want even the position anymore. Although they have to have a ruler. So they want a different system. We want to elect our ruler. Checks and balances. But Prabhupada, clearly, this is the political sociology 101, clearly does not like that system. Say it this way. If you have a trained person, whether he's the king or elected doesn't matter. If you don't have a trained person, whether he's king or elected, it doesn't matter. What's needed is the quality person. Now, how do you get the quality person? It's not by popular votes you get a quality person. It's by Brahminical culture. Then there can be proper training of the monarch. Without proper training, you're not going to have a quality person. So Brahminical culture comes first. And when Brahminical culture, just going through European history very quickly, the Pope was supposed to be in like that position, like, you know, next to God. And then the king was under the, you know, receiving spiritual inspiration and guidance from the Pope. But when that connection became corrupt, instead of what's being described between Swayambhuva Manu and Karma Muni, neither were qualified. It was just, you know, I scratch your back and you scratch my back. The king, like King Constantine, he wanted a unified theology. Because with divided theology, he couldn't rule. With unified theology, he could rule. You know, bishops, get it together. Go inside the chamber and don't come out until you agree on your theology. Or the sword. So they had an agreed upon theology. Okay, I'll support you. And you support me. Is it a deal? It's a deal. Okay. We'll have Christianity everywhere. Your brand of Christianity everywhere. And I'm the king. But when the priests became so corrupt, and the kings became debauchees, people said, forget this. We don't want corrupt priests and debauched kings. Get rid of those priests. We'll have our own church on the road coming in here. There's a big church, believers' church. They're not even like non-denominational, like faith in God church. It's just believers' church. Big sign, believers' church. Believe in what? on the road going to the Detroit temple, there's a church, big sign is I am what I am church. I am what I am church. Hare Krishna. So corruption of the kings said to the people, we don't want this. I mean, they were just completely decadent, intoxicated, and woman-mongering, and all over the place. And that was their king. So, down with the king, and up with some other, but we have to have somebody else. So we'll decide who that somebody else is. Democracy. The reason Prabhupada is going into this is because, you know, the fall of monarchy is because that's directly what the sage is saying. My dear boy, the Lord, who carries the wheel of a chariot is represented by the monarchical regime. And when this regime is abolished, it was speaking about the abolishment of kings, then the whole world becomes filled with thieves, who then at once vanquish the unprotected subjects, like scattered lambs. So that, you know, the wolf gets into the sheep pen and starts chasing after the sheep in the name of, he's the head of state, exploiting the people, because they don't know without the proper qualifications. So that the admonishment to the son is that these two things are repeated four times. So there's the prosperity in the kingdom, and the reason there's prosperity in the kingdom is because the king is pious. And where the king is pious, he benefits from that prosperity, and the citizens benefit from his piety. They prosper also. And then they're also protected. And protected doesn't just mean, you know, invaders from the outside. It also means protected from their own impurities, protected from their own tendencies to low-grade activity, because they're protected by the strong king who makes sure that they're engaged in their proper activity on the strength of his piety and the strength of his chivalrousness, like Maharaj Pariksit defeating the personality of Kali. So Prabhupada writes, the king is said to be the representative of the absolute personality of Godhead because he is trained to acquire the qualities of God. And when he has the qualities of God, then people prosper. It follows. There's piety, people prosper. To have qualities of God, that's the highest kind of piety. And then such a king, the people prosper. It's like in the ninth canto, the description of Maharaj Ambarish. He was fabulously wealthy. Or in this first canto, Maharaj Yudhisthira, fabulously wealthy, rivaling the wealth of Indra. The demigods heard, oh, how wealthy. Let's go visit him. How pious. Let's go visit him. And if so, if it's somebody who's impious, who wants to go visit him? Trained to acquire the qualities of God. And then again, trained by culture and devotional service. As a refrain, when Prabhupada is using this word culture, it doesn't just mean, you know, like they went to a boarding school in England and learned culture, learned how to stand straight and speak good English and say yes sir and no ma'am, and, you know, took lessons of Emily Post and how to, from India, you don't know that one. You know, just like worldly etiquette, how you put the fork in the knife. Not that kind of culture, but Brahminical culture. By culture, it means Brahminical culture, because from Brahminical culture comes all the other forms of culture. All the other forms of culture. Elevated quality. By abiding by truth and by abiding by virtue. That kind of culture. And devotional service. So, elevating society to the higher standards of goodness by influence of those situated in goodness. Or, in simple language, Brahminical culture. Respecting Brahminical culture provides or creates a society that's trained by culture and devotional service. But then the other side is, why they have culture and they have devotional service, they're strong. The king has martial spirit. So there's protection when some other kind of thing comes in. And it doesn't like namby-pamby, he stops it. As is appropriate, offering in that way, offering protection. Such personal monarchy is far better than the so-called democracy of no training and no responsibility. Responsibility specifically to give protection. Rather, it's the other, exploit. Make more taxes. How many different ways can we tax people? Oh, I came up with another one. Let's try this one. Let's try that one. Because we're not meeting the budget. We have so many people to pay. Our staff is so big. We need more budget. Prabhupada's comment was very simple. You just have one flag, and you don't have, you know, so many hundreds of different countries with so many hundreds of different ministers taking more and more taxes from the people every time another state comes. They have to have another set of administration. Just have qualified people, and qualified people get the job done. And unqualified people don't get the job done. So you have to have more of them, and then you get the job done less with more taxes. And people are more disturbed. They have to pay so much taxes, and they still can't do ABC. The thieves and rogues of modern democracy seek election by misrepresentation of votes, and the successful rogues and thieves devour the mass of population. So one trained monarch is far better than hundreds of useless ministerial rogues. Our discussion this morning was, how did they do it? They did it because people were qualified. And because they were qualified, there was respect. And so when the leader said, let's do this, the answer was yes. Because there was respect. There was unity. Although there's diversity. And without respect, without due respect because of due qualification and due training, the Brahminical culture is at the head of all of this. Have to have those qualified persons. And the absence of such qualified persons, Prabhupada's formula, described very clearly in the Bhagavatam, is Bhagavad Dharma and creating qualified people out of unqualified people. And is that challenging? Yes, it's challenging. But that's the call of the hour, because without that, it's chaos. And so such training should be thorough. Again and again and again and again. Retraining and retraining and retraining and real thorough training. So there's really quality people. And then those really quality people have to roll up their sleeves and do really quality service. Gave the example when, how did it get done? When Dasarath said to Sumantra, summon the army. Get all the soldiers and all the elephants and all the chariots together. We're going to the forest. Or take Ram to the forest. Immediately happened. It was one person. But one person was a quality person. And he had other quality persons that he was connected with, and it happened like that. Or when they wanted to make a road for the whole royal family to go find Sita, Ram, and Lakshman. You know, just they did it, just like that. Because there was unity and the facility, because of the piety, there was opulence, and there was respect. So the king said, and so be it. So the admonishment here is, we have such a quality king, Maharishi Parikshit. The whole kingdom is prospering. People are protected. He's as good as God. My dear son, you're cursing. This is very bad. This is a great offense. And the consequence is, monarchy will be destroyed. out of that disrespect for the qualified monarch, especially from the brahmanas. The brahmanas are to instruct and guide and thereby protect, not to curse. It'll bring the ruination of everything. So Prabhupada writes, it is hinted herein that by abolition of monarchical regime, like that of Maharaj Parikshit, the mass of the people become open to many attacks of the age of Kali. And how that kingless kingdom plays itself out in Kali Yuga is the next set of verses. Text 44. Due to the termination of the monarchical regimes, so this is like seeing into the future or at our present condition, and in turn the plundering of the people's wealth by rogues and thieves, there'll be great social disruptions. People will be killed and injured, and animals and women will be stolen. And for all these sins, we, the brahmanas, will be responsible. That's a pretty heavy forecast, and taking the ownership of causing all of that to happen. Prabhupada writes in the purport, the word we, or naha, is very significant. The sage rightly takes the responsibility of the brahmanas as a community for killing monarchical government, and thus giving an opportunity to the so-called Democrats, not meaning, you know, as opposed to the Republicans, but the followers of democracy, who are generally plunderers of the wealth of the state subjects. The so-called democracy advocates capture the administrative machine without assuming responsibility for the prosperous condition of the citizens. You know, it's a crazy system. So, to get elected, I promise I'll get more jobs. And it's the whole arrangement of following a system, like championing a system that is inherently decadent. So he becomes the king, he becomes the president. And to the degree that he does, you know, provide more jobs and promotes consumer economics, he'll be championed in the history books. But actually, the whole system is the wrong system. The wrong system. We'll be hearing about some of it tomorrow. It's unsustainable. It's vicious. It's hurtful. It's not going to last. It's just a question of, does it explode today or tomorrow? And in between today and tomorrow, how many people are being hurt? And character is being lost, and resources are, unrestorable resources are being finished. And so many things, so many God-created things are just being turned upside down in the name of consumer economics. But he's got the job, and not just our fellow here in the United States, all over the world, get more jobs. Crazy. And it's got to be crazy without a qualified person. And how are we going to get a qualified person? There has to be somebody that in fact, is not just a pious person. You know, this one goes to the church, and that one goes to the synagogue, and that one goes to the mosque, and they're all praying to the same God. You know, destroy this person, destroy that person, destroy that person. We have the answer. Destroy the other person. From a Bhagavat Dharma perspective, it's very easy to see and to say the system is inherently flawed, which is what Prabhupada is doing. The system of monarchy, when properly working, that is, when you have one who is actually trained and given the authority to rule, they have the qualification and the authority to rule, that's the best system. When that system, which the curse of Sringi is the entry of the personality of Kali into the Brahminical order, marking the beginning and then escalating thereafter. The intellectuals becoming agents of Kali, or the would-be Brahmanas becoming tools in the hand of Kali, creating quarrel and strife. That has to be checked. That's the root. It has to be checked. Until that's checked, it's chaos. From a economic point of view, as we'll be a little bit discussing tomorrow, the topic is so big you can't do it in one short session. But the whole system is flawed. It's got to break down. It can't. It's not well conceived of, because it's not God's plan. But you know, just produce consumer goods, more and more and more. Get more people to consume, produce more and consume more, and then you have a healthy economy. That's the standard. What the losses are, don't worry about the losses. Devamrita Swami is developing. He has a whole approach on accounting, which is generally thought of as a super dry subject. But there's one devotee who just finished his PhD somewhere in New Zealand on spiritual accounting. Got his PhD in spiritual accounting, and the theme or premise of the PhD thesis is traditional accounting is profit and loss. How much profit and how much loss, and see the balance, and then you have, that's accounting. So that doesn't work because there are other losses besides in the dollar category. There's losses of character. There's losses of enthusiasm. There's loss of value. There's loss of resources. There's loss of people being human to one another, and thereby losing their spirit. So you have to, his thesis is, you have to look at the whole picture of profit and loss. Not just numbers of how much goods and how much services and how many dollars in and how many dollars out. The profit and loss principle is fine provided you expand it. And lots of research and research and research and people writing on the subject and the conclusion. You got his PhD. Going into the future, we have to have accounting that's sustainable. So you can continue to have profit instead of not taking account of so many losses, and you end up the prophet crashes. And there's no explanation for it other than just, you know, accounting is supposed to be a measure that tells persons who are doing managing, how are we doing? And it's grossly insufficient. The present model, which is the same thing as the model of the more you produce and the more you consume, the healthier your economy is. So just produce more and consume more. So put more money in the bank so people can borrow some more money so they can produce more. And when people are producing more, they can spend more, and they spend more, you have more jobs. You have a healthy economy. Everything's going along great. But you look at the whole picture, and that's not what the whole picture is. So the whole thing implodes. It has to. And it just elect another guy that's going to stand up there and say, no, we're going to make it work. We're just going to get more jobs and more production and more consumption. We'll see what happens over the coming decades as oil is gone. You so many things that people are just depending upon for their, you know, for their existence. You know, the transportation systems, which is so much tied into the economy and prosperity and, you know, tourism. And where's it all going to go? The advocacy that we're hearing in Srimad Bhagavatam consistently, I'll end with this, is agrarian-based economy, simple living, sustainable simple living, and monarchy, qualified king, and qualified brahmanas training and guiding the qualified king. That's sustainable. That's Krishna's system. And the further away we go from Krishna's system, the more it's chaos, and that there's no happiness in that. Just there's exploitation, and how bad it gets, it just changes from time to time, but it's all bad. And cannot become good. To be continued. Any discussion? Bet they didn't teach you these things in Texas. There's more oil.
they're confident too that there is no problem, or that we'll be able to solve it in the future through technology, the older economy.
Sure. Yeah. We just need to find more oil within the United States. At least if we listen to our president. You know, we have to stop depending upon resources from outside the United States, because that causes wars. As if resources in the United States is not going to cause wars. Or it's an unending supply. But although they know it's an ending supply. No problem. That's, you know, the emperor has no clothes. You know that story, right? You don't know that story? Emperor has no clothes. You know the story? You know the story? I forget the details. I've heard it so long ago, but you know, there was a minister or somebody that the king hired somebody to make finest set of clothes. He said, "I need a private privacy." He said, because it's going to be very special. It's for the king. So he came and presented the king with an invisible set of clothes. And the king didn't want to question because he knows this is this very special person. So the king went parading around in his new set of clothes. And everybody was wondering. There was, you know, this is the very special clothes that this very special person made, and parading around to one small boy said, "The king has no clothes." And then everybody, you know, domino effect said, "Well, yeah, the king has no clothes, but we thought it was a special set of clothes made by a special person, a cheater." Something like that. These topics in the first canto are in the first canto by Vyasadeva's design for a reason. It's before going further and further and further and further into the richness of spiritual subject matter, one needs to understand the perils of material existence. Just like Krishna in Bhagavad Gita speaks very clearly about the peril of fruitive work. Now, most people who are fruitive workers don't think a thing about what's the problem with fruitive work. That's what you do. You work for some result. What's wrong? There's this book that says you don't do that. What are they talking about? And then the Bhagavatam is taking it to this, you know, you need a king. You need brahmanas. And they need to give leadership to society and protection to one another and to the whole society. And along with monarchy, you need, you know, the ownership of all things is God's. And you go away from that, you get, you know, this false sense of ownership and an unqualified person giving leadership without Brahminical culture and without qualified king. And what happens? Here's what Shyamakrishi is saying, the sage is saying, the people just get exploited. Is it harsh? Is it reality? From the Bhagavatam perspective, it's reality, as much as fruitive work is binding upon the performer, is reality. It's a spiritual perspective on the qualities of a capable leader and a capable guide to the capable leader. And the deterioration of that in the form of this event. Very deep. Anything to add?
It seems like when somebody is becoming qualified in this spiritual sense, he's losing the authority to use that qualification for the benefit of people. Like,
How so? Because people in general won't believe or won't have faith or won't recognize that qualification? Because they want sense gratification and this person's not promising sense gratification, so they turn their attention away from his qualification. That's your idea? Well, let's look at a really qualified person, as was Srila Prabhupada, and what was the result was a division. as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. There is two responses to the glorification of the holy of Krishna. The suras and the asuras divide. The godly are attracted and the others are repelled. So Prabhupada indicated when there was opposition to his Hare Krishna movement, that was a good sign. Because there was something happening. If there's nothing happening, then people, you know, they don't pay attention. If there's something happening that's good, then the asuras take notice. But those that are godly, they appreciate. Now, so that conflict or the confrontation of suras and asuras, that's eternal. It's not just contemporary. So Prabhupada explained that as the Hare Krishna movement grows, at some point in time, there'll have to be actual kshatriya force and enforcing. Like, you know, a battle. We're not there. But religious-minded persons appreciate purity and strength and truth. Opposition will be there. That's okay. But some recognition will be there from those that are pious, is the response I'm giving. Theoretically, yes. The problem, of course, is the electorate needs to be the model of democracy propounded by the fathers of the model of democracy required an enlightened electorate. Not just educated, but enlightened. So that model can then support and sustain a qualified leader.
It's more like Plato's.
Yes.
Utopian.
Yes. That's it.
It's not possible.
But even if there were a truly qualified person, like, you know, your question, a truly qualified person would command the respect of a number of people offering genuine leadership. But then, you know, you read in the Bhagavatam in the first canto, the previous chapter 17, what are the things that a qualified leader would do? Close all liquor shops, close all, you know, animal slaughterhouses and meat shops, you know, just do things that people would freak out. So you can't do that in today's society. You can't have a qualified leader in today's society. People would, you know, freak out. Impeach the president. You're violating our rights. A right to sin boldly under the laws of the land.
Today, what is happening is majority people deserve what is happening. So what is happening? Can we say that?
So the transformation has to be gradual, and the gradual transformation is bringing spiritual influence spiritual influence and pious influence to elevate people out of that sinful contamination. So it would take a very qualified, spiritually qualified person, a Maharaj Ambarish qualified person, to elevate people from their sinful entanglements, and a whole lot of people to assist Maharaj Ambarish to do it that are highly qualified spiritually. So rather than speaking, how to influence the world, we can start with, influencing our own Sangha of Vaishnavas. And that takes some spiritual qualification also.
Spiritual accounting and the sustainable living. Things that business school is kind of pushing on people right now. And it's a thought that sustainable business adventures, or sustainability as a whole is something.
It's a buzz. It's out there.
Right.
But.
But.
are you going to say something on the but side?
Well, what does sustainable really mean in a spiritual context?
So in the spiritual context, it's God consciousness, or the clear connection with of things that are being sustained by the sustainer is it's on the level of consciousness and the level of behavior. But let's say sustainable agriculture, where you don't have to be God conscious, supposedly. You just, you recognize we have to rotate crops and we can't do this, we have to do that, and we do, so we have sustainable agriculture. The unmeasured factor is greed. And false proprietorship. Those things, add those contaminations of consciousness into the mix of sustainable agriculture, and everything becomes spoiled. Either incrementally or in big quantums, it gets spoiled because the consciousness isn't sustainable. It brings in contaminating factors, even though they have the richness of knowledge of modern thought on what is sustainable. Sustainable human relations. Without sustainable human relations, you're not going to have sustainable agriculture or sustainable economy or sustainable. So without minus God consciousness, it's not going to work. It's nice. It's good for people to think like that and push like that and become crusaders for the cause of sustainability. I didn't attend the class, but Jai Jagannath on the way down here was sharing one of Krishnasmarana's classes and a Sunday program about people speak of green, going green, but how can you? It's unsustainable without recognizing where everything comes from. Without permenical culture, you're not going to have that understanding of where everything comes from. And if you don't have that understanding where everything comes from, then it's up for grabs. And try to be green with the mode of passion, where everything's up for grabs. It's never going to become green, and very quickly it's going to become dirty again, for lack of understanding where everything comes from. Now, where are you going to get that understanding? From people who have that understanding and live by it. The detached, qualified brahmanas who train and guide society. You must have that to have green and to have sustainable. There's a growing phenomena, along with the growing concern, there's a growing phenomena of sustainable enterprise, including sustainable agriculture. But sustainable enterprise, it's a nice word. In course of time, as with other ideals, I was mentioning one of them last night, the ideal of communes. Because let's take this center over here, we'll make this our center, we'll all place our individuality on this center, we'll all work cooperatively towards this center. In the course of time, that center is going to shift for different people, and that the cause is going to dissipate. The commune will dissipate, the focus will dissipate, unless it's a natural center. The natural center source is God, not just sustainability. Where does that come? So that's all very nice for us to sit in a room and talk about. So the far more challenging thing is to do it. That's far more challenging. It's going to take quality people to do it. So there's, I think, a very good attempt. What I have with me, I'll be glad to share it. There was a presentation from Echo Valley, they call it in Hungary, where their attempt is all of these things with God consciousness. And, it's working. It's working in a lot of different levels. People are giving grants to do this thing, and tourism coming to see how they're doing it. They're off the grid, and they grow everything. They have oxen, power, and agriculture, and cows, and homes, and worship, and off the grid, and they're very happy, and it's going on for years, and they have their little government, and they have a really good leader. I've not met him, but I've heard descriptions. A very, very quality leader. And nice little DVD. Well, it's a DVD. It's a CD that has different PowerPoints and for different audiences to showcase what they're doing. And I met with Purushottaraya Swami. He came to Chicago, yes? Okay. Did Purushottaraya Swami come to Chicago from Brazil? Describe his Gora Vrindavan project.
I don't think that was it, but I think
I saw him in Mayapur. He gave me his PowerPoint and gave me a quick run through. And they're, they're in a tropical rainforest, and it's beautiful, and it's, it's off the grid, same thing. And they're really happy doing, showing by example it's doable with God at the center. But the real test will be not only the pioneers are doing it, but their children are happy to do it. Because it's real, and then it's sustainable. It's a nice topic. It's a nice challenge to try to meet, to not just talk about it, but to do it. But it takes some talking about it to understand it before you can do it. Devamrita Swami is making a similar effort in New Zealand, where it's, you know, the climate is very nice, and they have some land, and they're developing along these lines very carefully. And we're thinking to see if something like that can develop in Hidanagari, because they already have the land, they already have homes, they already have the deities, they already have the temple. So, slowly, maybe, as a model. And there was some discussion just a week ago, Putrashrava and Donna Kelly and Krishna Smaran and Nitin Dhapana speaking about, you know, a small project somewhere in this wonderful climate of the Midwest. Maybe doing something modest and but of a nice standard. There's some enthusiasm and there's some qualified people. And I think Krishna will send the resource if the vision and the commitment are there. But it's important to be very clear why the current model doesn't work. It's destined to not work. Not like it was designed to not work, but it's destined to not work. Both the using these words, the culture, the character, the vision, the leadership, the God-conscious center, all those things must be there. And you skip some part of it, and it's not going to endure. Real easy to do things wrong. Say, well, I tried. It's far more challenging to do things right. You have to have real quality to do things right. Anyway. Okay, thank you very much. Jiva Prabhupada. Food for thought.